All right, this is the Ian Rapoport Stereo Podcast. My name is Michael Rapoport, a.k.a. the Gringo Mandingo. So we were down in New Orleans with the Ian Rapoport Stereo Podcast and starting this new show that we're doing on TuneIn Radio. Me and my man Kenyon Martin, we're doing it every Wednesday, 5 to 7 Eastern. All NBA, everything, but we talk about everything. It's dope. It's called The Two-Man Weave. Me and Kmart, who you might have heard in the other podcast. We had an all Kmart episode. But today, we're doing something cool, man. This is a mashup. The I Am Rapoport Stereo Podcast is sponsored by Casper Mattress, an obsessively engineered mattress at a shockingly fair price. You could try a Casper mattress for 100 nights risk-free in your home. If you do not love it, they will pick it up and refund you everything. With over 20,000 reviews online and an average of 4.8 stars, Casper is quickly becoming the internet's most popular mattress. They have sheets, they have pillows, they even have doggy beds. Go to Casper.com, save $50 towards any mattress purchase by visiting www.casper.com/Rapoport. Use the promo code Rapoport. Try a Casper mattress, 100 nights risk-free in your home. If you don't love it, they will pick it up and refund you everything. Go to www.casper.com/Rapoport.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
It's Two Man Weave with Michael Rapoport and Kenyon Martin.
Oh, did Martin get that? On the way back down, he tipped in the alley-oop. The set play out of a timeout. That might be the dunk of the night.
Live from All-Star Weekend in New Orleans.
All right. My name is Michael Rapoport. This is the Two Man Weave, but I'm about to run the Three Man Weave. And I'm going to just throw it up on the break. And I'm going to get it to somebody, either one of these dudes in their prime. I don't know what they have left in the tank as far as slamming it down. I know Kenyon can do a little something. Rex, I'm not sure. My name is Michael Rapoport. I'm here with Kenyon Martin. We have a true unicorn of basketball, the great Rex Chapman. Okay, you've done a lot of things on the court. But first of all, I just want to rock people's world. Five-star basketball camp after your freshman year, Kentucky.
Right.
You're a counselor, quiet guy, shy guy, Ramil Robinson.
Yeah, me and Ramil, rooming together. We were there as campers a couple years before.
Probably in the blue chip status.
Yeah. We were invited.
Right, you were invited.
We were invited.
Yeah, I wasn't invited. I just was there. But.
Were you one of the guys cleaning up the tables?
I wasn't cleaning tables. Okay? But I wasn't in that other special little thing where you're invited and you're getting sneakers and God knows what under the table.
Listen,
we don't want to talk about that right now. But Rex Chapman was one of my counselors at camp, okay, at the five-star basketball camp. I don't know if this was 86, 87. Now, did you remember this about me, Rex Chapman? Like, were you able to put two and two? At that time, I wasn't a world-renowned actor, obviously.
No. Yes, I put it together. We talked the other day. You told me, and the second you said five-star, I went, I knew that little annoying New York dude somewhere.
That's right.
That's exactly what it was. Hey, by the way, do we have another chair?
Is it going to break?
No, George. Okay. George is coming, right? George Carl?
Oh, okay.
I figured George would come in and hang with Kent. What are y'all doing tonight, Kent? You and George. What are you and George doing tonight?
Probably going to go play in traffic.
On the freeway?
Yeah. Play Frog or let him go first.
All right,
if he makes it, I'll go.
Okay. I'll try to set it up. No, I won't either.
Rex Chapman is here on the Three Man Weave. Yes. Kenyon Morton, how do you guys know each other?
One of my point guards in the league was Jay Kidd.
Yep.
One of his great point guards. When they went, we traded Jay. I played against you, right?
Yeah.
And then Jay went to New Jersey, where they went to the finals. Right. And then I retired. And then I brought Kenyon back out to Denver. I was with Kenyon in Denver. After that second, we signed him to a big deal.
Yeah. Right.
But then he got the second microfracture.
Right.
He went from Kenyon to Kenron.
Uh-huh. Microfracture ain't no joke.
No, microfracture's not. No joke of an injury,
I had one on each knee, man.
Came back.
The only athlete to ever play after double microfracture.
But not lose any bounce either. Right. That's the crazy thing about him. That's just genetics, man. Right. I mean, he was cut on three times.
Three on my left knee, one on my right knee.
We're sending him to get blood plasma spun and everything.
I tried everything.
And came back jumping just as high every single time.
The point we was making earlier about wanting to play.
Right.
I did everything imaginable to stay on the court, man.
Right.
I'm not trying to sit out no games.
Right.
I'm trying to play.
Right.
Going through knees, all that. I'm trying to play. I ain't trying to miss nothing.
That was it.
Yeah. So Rex, with the state of like certain front offices throughout the league now, you're a former player.
Right.
Do you feel that more guys, former players, should be put in those positions? Like, not everybody can do the job. I know that.
Right.
Not everybody can look at talent and see talent on the fly and or put a team together.
Mm-hmm.
But you've been around. You have conversations with guys that you played against.
Right.
Maybe younger, maybe older, whatever. Do you think more guys should be put in those positions and not guys who, say, went to school for sports management or so to speak, or like those kind of things? Do you think like certain guys deserve those opportunities?
This is a great question. And here's what I love about listening to Kenyon. You know, people don't know Kenyon.
Right.
They don't know the depth of Kenyon.
I agree.
They just see the guy on TV and they oh, he like Boogie Cousins or he like Rashid. Nope.
Right.
There's a lot of depth to this young man right here.
I agree.
Here's what I think, okay? Yeah, you know, we all want to see our peers do well and succeed and move on and have opportunities. I think the NBA is a real cyclical kind of deal. Mm-hmm. You know, for years and years, it was just basketball players in those positions.
Yeah.
You know, you go back to when I was coming through the mid-'80s and before that, it was all basketball people. Over the years, you know, as we've gotten into analytics more and there are more opportunities, I think, for guys that are that have done the schoolwork and know that side of it. But I also think that it'll come back around. You know, right now, most of the guys running teams, I guess the most part, are, you know, guys who went to school, with studied at marketing and analytics and sports and all that, and do great jobs.
Yeah.
I think that at some point, though, it'll circle back.
It should be a mix, though. It should be guys who been in the fold, know what it takes in order to compete at that level.
Yeah.
And mix it with those guys who know the numbers and put the numbers in. Okay, this is what I think we need.
Mm-hmm.
This is what the numbers say.
There's a little bit of a divide.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah,
there's
a
divide, though,
definitely.
Between, you know, the analytic guys. They
think they know it all.
Well, they know all that stuff.
I understand. Let me ask you this.
Uh-huh.
Can you go to, like right now, we can win New Orleans. We can go to any court, any gym, any place in this city.
Mm-hmm.
We can sit there for 2 hours and watch basketball.
Mm. Right.
Do you know you can pick out who can and who cannot play basketball?
Yes.
Right?
Yes, I feel like
so,
I can.
That's what I think is missing.
Yeah.
The eye test.
Yeah.
People put these numbers in the computer like, oh, he drive left too much.
Yeah.
Oh, he don't work for us.
You're right.
But
the best guys doing the job right now are guys like, you know, Danny Ainge, RC Buford, these guys with track records of building championship teams.
Yeah.
But the one thing I know from those guys is that they take analytics and they take the workout and they take the body. They're all tools.
Mm-hmm.
And the best of them won't just look at the analytics and go, we got to plug him in. They do have the eye test.
Yeah.
So, you know, but I'm with you.
All right.
Look, this guy, he can run a team.
No,
I know
I agree.
This. Yeah. You put him in a personnel spot, he knows.
His basketball IQ is high.
He knows. You know what I now am just remembering about five-star?
That was great player. I should have been recruited a little bit higher.
Well, no, that Patrick Knight, Bobby's son, whipped your ass all week, didn't he?
Oh, no, he didn't crack my ass.
No. Patrick Knight?
No. He didn't give me no business.
You gave him that janky left-handed jump shot?
You know you remember it. See, man, this is – we're going back 20 years.
That's right.
Guess what?
30 years.
That means you did something right.
That's right.
No, Patrick Knight didn't give me anything. You think I'm going to let some son of a coach give me a problem from Indiana? I'm from New York. I had some pride with me. He was going to get a form or something like that.
Yeah.
You know what's crazy about that, Kev? I believe that year Sean Kemp.
I think Sean was there. I think maybe Grant Hill.
Oh,
Jesus.
Yeah, Grant was there. Your age.
Yeah, Grant was a little older than me, but like.
And maybe Leitner.
Yes.
Guys, yeah. They were young. You guys were all high schoolers.
I love that you associate me with Grant, some of the blue chip recruits.
Mike Rappaport, Grant Hill, Christian Leitner, Sean Kemp.
I swear to God.
It's a good class.
Yeah, it was a good class. I remember looking over at Sean Kemp, who was either 18 or 19, but he was full
Full grown. Yeah.
And I look over at him, and he has like a full goatee. I mean, the basketball camp was the best players in the country. It was literally like – it was like square dancing.
And we're playing outside.
Right. And it was long. Those courts felt longer
than
normal.
So long and hot.
Hot. But a great camp to learn, though.
Yeah, it was, for sure.
Now, you guys played on this Denver team, which I think over the years will be sort of remembered and sort of like – like there's a folklore about this team. You have Kenyon – you have JR, you have Carmelo.
Mm-hmm.
What was it like, sort of these guys with these young stallions?
And Allen, we had AI.
Right, he came later.
Yeah, came a little later, but took that team with Chauncey and went to the Western Conference Finals. Got beat by the Lakers in six.
Right,
and if Melo would have showed up that day, we'd have got them.
What was it like?
Your boy Melo, I'm sorry.
My boy Melo.
Your boy Melo.
With Melo with the braids.
That's our guy.
There's a lot of dudes. J.R. Smith likes the basketball. Mm-hmm. Carmelo likes the basketball. Obviously, Allen likes the basketball. And Allen, and then you got Kenyon.
And Nene. Yeah, had a talented team now. Really
what,
talented.
What do you do with all that talent, all these personalities? You got tattoos every day.
Yeah.
My man Kenyon's got tattoos, then he gets tattoos covered. Dudes, I mean, what was it like be sort of, and you're an ex-player, you're respected. Yeah. What are we doing with this team? And what is George called?
That's like, George, exactly.
Break What's it down.
George, here, we had a great team for George because, as you know, Kay, George thrives on controversy. He thrives on the drama, likes it. If there's no drama, he'll inject a little bit. That's just how he is. So he kind of liked, I know he liked our personalities because the thing when you got Kenyon Martin and Nene, trotting those guys out there at the 4 and 5 position every night in this watered down NBA, you got half the big man battle won the second you step on the court with these two guys.
Right.
Guys don't want to go against Kenyon Martin and Nene every single night. Not in today's NBA, they
right.
don't. Right?
Right.
So we had a good mix of guys, a fun group of guys. There was drama all the time, guys getting fined, guys being late, the normal stuff. But we kind of embraced that and, you know, let our guys be who they are. And we took a shot, took a big swing.
When you were playing Rex with your career, I mean, there's so much I could talk to you about. You mean you in Kentucky? I mean, people don't remember. Some people do, some people don't. But, I mean, when you were like a star. It was with UK. You were a white dude with a motor and who could jump. Were you offended when Woody Harrelson came up? Be like, yo, I'll bang it on you. Like, Woody, I don't know what you're doing, Woody, but I'll bang it on you backwards, sideways, two hands, one hand. Did that movie offend you? Did the concept of that offend you?
No, it didn't. One of my favorite things
was
going.
That white guy can't jump.
Yeah.
This white guy can't.
Right.
Kenyon knows I had a lot of fun with my teammates growing up, but most of my teammates, they know this one thing about me. In practice, I would do it all the time, dating back to a high school. And I would come in, and I'd catch somebody, and I'd dunk and yell, "Cracker!"
You would yell it.
In the game, too. In the NBA game. And guys on the bench just cracking up, laughing. Yeah, did he yell "Cracker"?
Right, right. Because, that's, I mean, you were so heavily recruited. You were such a star. And well, what do you – like, when you look back at like, that recruiting time, and college basketball has changed so much. I mean, was it as crazy? And, like, do you get all the offers? Like, every school wanted you, correct?
Yeah.
Pretty much.
Yeah.
I mean, like, are the coaches coming at you with all sorts of shenanigans?
Oh, yeah. I mean, you know, this was in the 80s, so it was kind of a free-for-all. I remember getting up one morning and went outside, and in the evening, I'd taken a nap, and the recruiting period was supposed to start at, like, midnight. There's this guy out in front of us asleep in the car, Owensboro, Kentucky, sleeping in the car. And I walked out there, and I get ready to knock on the window. And he goes, and looks, Jimmy V, Coach Valvano, sleeping in the car out there waiting for midnight so he could be the first guy.
That's crazy.
That's a great story.
That is crazy.
Yeah.
That's a great story.
You're doing stuff here on TuneIn.
Right.
NBA on
Fired
TuneIn.
Up.
Are you excited about it?
Fired up. What's better than this?
I mean,
I was doing some stuff the other night, just having it, you know, hearing those live listen-ins where you can hear the guys just attacking the glass, you know, and hear the rim and the crowd. It's fantastic, right?
Right.
We get to do this and
still being in the fold without being having the wear and tear on your body, still being able to talk hoops, the camaraderie with the guys, and building different relationships, man. Oh, it's great.
I like that I'm able to, you know, kind of bridge with Kenyon because he was still playing. I played against him a little bit. I was an old guy by the time he was running through from Cincinnati. We did We did bang Cincinnati one time when I was in school, though.
Well, we was trying to get that bump when I was in school.
No, you weren't. No, hey, we didn't.
They didn't want
not
that bump.
Not with you.
Like, when I was there, we were trying to get that bump.
You
were trying to get that bump. We wanted Kentucky. We already were smacking Louisville.
Yeah.
We wanted Kentucky, and we wanted to play Ohio State, and they were not playing.
Kentucky's not exposing itself to number one
pick. We wanted all of that. We wanted to own that little tri-state thing.
You wanted everybody.
We wanted to own that, and they wouldn't give us that bump.
David Robinson thought he wanted some of it, too, when he was a senior, and I was a freshman. He didn't want none of Kentucky, but he did give us a triple-double.
Oh, see, exactly.
When you were a freshman in college, who were the other guys? Who was in your class in college?
It would be myself, J.R. Reed.
Oh.
Terry Mills.
Right.
Derek Coleman.
Wow.
Nick Anderson. Ramil Robinson.
Right.
You know, we might only had one or two all-stars, but I want to say that DC was. I was once and then replaced because I got hurt. But I think we had the most guy, you know, not all-stars, not all NBA guys, the most McDonald's guys to play, I want to call it, 8 years in the league.
Right.
Something like that. So a bunch of them, but just good players.
Yeah, just a couple.
Yeah.
Now, there's a myth. I don't know if this is true. That you babysat a young
Steph was my rookie year. You know, I was in 88.
88?
Yeah.
That's offensive.
Yeah, 88. This is what? 29th year in the league.
That's offensive, man.
He and Dell and Sonya were living, they lived two doors down from me. The first day I got there, I pulled up, had to unload stuff. Dell had a broken arm in position. He helps me, they help. And we became the best of friends. And then Dell, about once a week, would drop off little baby Stefan with, I was 19 at the time, and I would just pray he wouldn't wake up. Pray I didn't have to change that nasty diaper, but
are
I did plenty
serious?
Of that. Yeah. So once or twice a week, they'd bring him out, go out for movie night, and I would just pray that he wouldn't die in my care.
Now it's good. Shooter Wardell Curry is,
but that's hell of a trust of a teammate.
Yeah,
listen,
anything.
I loved all my teammates. Listen, I'm not dropping down one of my kids off. Listen,
with JR?
Not at all.
Not JR Smith?
Not at all.
Rookie JR Smith?
Not at all.
Second year JR Smith?
Not at
Even
all.
Fourth year JR Smith?
I almost saw him kill JR.
Tell me the story, Rex.
You know, as pranks go, JR got. Then he determined, Kenyon just got a brand new, what was it?
My Range.
Range Rover. And JR.
White interior.
JR decided during the game he was going to have the ball boys go out and just open it all up, open the T-top.
Right. The sunroof.
The sunroof.
Ooh, you old.
And T-top. Yeah,
and he's from Kentucky.
Right. I'd wear a mullet right now if I could.
Yeah, and he's Southern.
But JR puts just a whole car full of buttered ball game popcorn in Kenyon's car, and it wasn't coming out, and he went nuts. We had to get JR out of there. Like, it was a serious, serious thing for a couple days.
I was trying to go to his house.
Yes, he was.
But listen, Rex called, Stan Kroenke called, Josh Kroenke called, everybody, team security called.
I got to call him off the ledge.
Everybody called, like, Kenyon, please don't go over there. Please don't go over this boy's house. Listen, yo.
It was code red for a while.
So I went back. So I didn't play this game. Listen, so I didn't play. So I didn't have nothing in my pockets in my suit. So I just put in my car keys, my wallet, everything in my locker.
Yeah.
JR tells the ball boy to take my car key and go out there and do it.
Right.
So I get out to my car. I hit the unlock button, and it don't click. It's already unlocked. Odd, but maybe I didn't lock my car.
Right.
I open the door and the stuff just falls out. I leave the door open.
Had that velour ceiling.
Listen, I leave the door open on the car. Leave the door open. Take my suit jacket off.
Mm.
It's freezing outside. Take my suit jacket off. Walk back in the locker room. Put on some basketball shoes.
Mm. And was looking for
with my slacks and basketball shoes. And like, who did it?
You were ready to go.
Listen, who did
ready
listen,
to go.
Listen, I know y'all got cameras and stuff in the parking lot. Go bring the tape back,
and
I ain't going nowhere until you tell me who did it.
I thought you were going to kill what's-his-name, too, for doing it. The little ball boy.
Listen, that's what I told the ball boy. Hey, You're not allowed back in the building. If I lay eyes on you, I'm going to hurt you.
He tried to fire the ball boy.
I am Rappaport Podcast.
Coming on to the set of the Two Man Weave, a.k.a. Real Chalk Talk. A man who is so close to my heart and so close to the hearts of New Yorkers. I think it's like almost like you literally could get signed to the Knicks right now.
I know
you might be a little bit out of shape and not game ready for this. We have the great Nick. Talk about a lunch pail player. Talk about a guy who represented New York. The good, the bad, and the crazy of New York Knicks fans. We have here on the two-man weave, John Starks.
What's going on?
Jay Starks.
Yes, sir.
All right, John Starks, listen. I don't even know where to start here. First of all, it's so good to see you. As I said, I literally, like, when I saw you, like, I see you all the time at Knicks games.
Yeah.
But there's a special situation going on in New York, okay? Mm-hmm. The Knicks are in disarray right now, okay? I just want to talk about why John Starks will always get a standing ovation.
You're being
in the
nice
garden.
With disarray, too.
Right.
That's a nice term.
Yes. But I'm going to tell you something, John. You so represented what New York fans love about a player. You aren't the best. You are sometimes the craziest. But you played the hardest. And New York and the New York fans and Madison Square Garden will always stand up for a player like you and what you did for those teams. Sometimes you shot us into games. Hmm. Sometimes you shot us out. But you wore your heart on your sleeve, yeah. And that's all that New Yorkers really want. What's going on with our Knicks, John?
Hmm?
What is going on with our Knicks? Have you ever seen this much chaos? Like, have you, like, when you walk down the streets of New York, obviously people are always happy to see you. Has the volume turned up a little bit when you're walking down Sixth Avenue now?
No, Kenyon, though, just playing in New York, the volume's always up, as you know. They're struggling right now. They're going through some tough times. You kind of scratch your head just because of the talent level that's on the team.
Yeah,
I think just looking at the East and looking at our talent level, you know, we should be a lot better than what the records show. I think we are a lot better than what the records show. But they have time, you know, which is a slim time, but they have time to really push for that A spot, I think,
right.
Coming down the stretch right now.
All right, we're in New Orleans. We're at All-Star Weekend. What is the All-Star Weekend? What does, you know, being an All-Star mean to you, John Starks? I mean, mm-hmm. your story is well documented. Give me the real. Like, before you actually made it consistently with the NBA, where were you at as a basketball player?
Where was I at as a basketball player?
I mean, because like, you know, like you were working at, I mean, were you actually working at a grocery store before you? Because that's like, I don't know if that's true. Is that a fairy tale?
No, it's not a fairy tale. It's a true story. I was actually in between colleges.
Right.
Let's say that. But, you know, I was working at a grocery store while I was in between a break from school.
Right.
And, you know, packing groceries and trying to make a living, you know,
right.
at that particular time. And before I decided to get back in school. And that's when kind of things turned for the good for me.
So was it ever in question of you going back to school?
Yeah, my older brother, he really pushed me to get back in school, yeah. you know, because I was in the parks, you know, playing basketball, but I was, you know, just dominating people. Yeah. And he saw a little bit more probably than what I saw in myself.
Mm.
And gotcha. So he told me that, you know, you're not going to just do this for the rest of your life. You know, you need to go back to school and get an education first and foremost. And then basketball just kind of, you know, took a life of its own when I got back. Yeah.
Making it into league as an undrafted guy, making the All-Star game, being such a, you meant so much to the fans. You know, mm-hmm. the Jordan, the Reggie Miller, the battles that those Knicks teams had. When you look back, what do you think it was about those teams? Because, you know, when those teams were going on, they referred to the old Knicks, the 70-73 teams.
Mm-hmm.
And now, I hate to say it, John, You guys, in my opinion, are the old Knicks, and the DeBuscher, Willis Reed guys are the older Knicks. And it hurts my heart that, like, you know, the glory days were almost 20 years ago. But when you think about that team, and what do you think resonated with the fans so much? What was so special about that team?
I think that, you know, we represented New York, and the way we played, the hard-nosed Scrabble style of basketball that, you know, you see in the parks.
Right.
And I think that's what the team represented. You know, we was blood and guts every time we step out on the court. And the league was a little different back then. Kenyon played back then where you can grab and hold and do certain things out there on the court that you couldn't get away with today's basketball. And I think the fans appreciated that physical style of play because it brought out the best in, you know, each team and each player. And it made for a lot of confrontations out there, you know, a lot of fights.
That's my next question.
Yeah, a lot of fights went on during that time. You know, I can remember a time coming back in the league, and when I came in the league, you literally had to fight your way to get respect, you know, and things wasn't given to you.
Right.
And so, you know, it made it hard for you, just like stepping on a yard. You know, in order for you to get your respect, you have to throw them up.
Right.
And that's just the way the league was back then. You know, you had the older guys coming at you on your team, and you had, you know, veteran guys in the league that didn't respect you at the time, and you had to get your respect. Yeah. And that's just the way it was.
So what you think about, like, the freedom of movement and all this stuff that they play with now? Like, like a guy like Steph Curry, clearly talented.
Yeah.
With yourself, more than likely, you would have been able to be in your matchup.
Oh, for sure.
You know.
Yeah.
What would you have done?
Oh, definitely.
What would you have done? Like, I was having this conversation last night at dinner.
Yeah.
I was telling people, like, you probably wouldn't try to make him rupture his Achilles or nothing like that. You ain't trying to hurt him permanently, but what would you have done now?
Oh, definitely. No. Back then, you know, you get physical. I mean, it was a physical game back then, and you knew as a guard, and you knew when you came down the lane, you was going to get hit, and you was going to get put on your back. And the referees back then would tell you just get up and go to the line. You know, they didn't, you know, they wasn't going to a lot of tape or anything to look at it. It was just a common foul. But the game is a little different now, you know what I mean? With a guy like Steph, you had to put your hands on him. If you couldn't put your hands on him, he's going to do what he's doing now. You know, I'd love to play during this time where guys can put their hands on me. It would have been fun. It would have been a lot of fun.
Your matchups with Reggie and Michael Jordan are legendary. They've actually made actual films. The ESPN 30 for 30 Winning Time, you know, focused on you and Reggie. The beauty of John Starks is you brought out the best in them.
Mm-hmm.
They knew when they came to New York and you were going to be on them every play. You were going to be on him. You were going to be fouling him. You were going to be agitating him. And if push came to shove, you'd be headbutting him. Okay, excluding Michael Jordan and Reggie Miller, who are the other guys that you would say these guys were, like, hard to guard?
Well, bigger guards always gave me problems because I was only 6'2", about 180 pounds, 185. So guys like Mitch Richmond, Clyde gave me a lot of problems. You know, Clyde 6'8", probably 220, 230. And so those guys, bigger guards, always gave me problems. Guys like Steve Smith always gave me problems because of their height. And a lot of them, times they'd take me down in the post. So what I did, I tried to be as physical as possible and front them as much as possible and rely on my backside help.
Right.
Yeah.
Now, I got to ask you, and you could articulate it as much or as little as you want. The Oakley thing has been so nuts. It was so crazy. First of all, were you at the game?
No, I wasn't.
Oh, God. Yeah. Thank God you weren't there.
Yeah,
because your old instincts might have kicked in. It could have turned into a whole war.
I wouldn't.
Been old.
No, I actually worked for the Knicks. So, obviously, Mike, you know I can't talk about that situation.
All right. Yeah. All right. Well, okay. You know, I mean, I'm glad it's resolved for right now. And because as a Knicks fan, you know, there was so much irony and so much metaphor in it. And, like, after all the chaos of it happened, like, me in my heart, like, I felt sad. I was just like, I felt sad for Oak. I felt sad for the Knicks. I felt sad for the fans. Like, it was just such a, like, where are we at?
Yeah.
You know, how did we get here? Listen, John, I got to tell you again, and I know I'm speaking on all fans of basketball, especially fans of the Knicks, what you did, the way you did it, at the time you did it, will never be forgotten. It'll always be appreciated. The Garden, Knicks fans will always stand up for you. You were and still are, represent the heart of New York. Mm-hmm. And I'm not talking about the bougie Soho or hipster Brooklyn. I'm talking about the working lunch pail people of New York City. What you did will never be forgotten. I personally appreciate it so much. And like I said, now with all the craziness, it means so much even more. Thank you for coming on the Two Man Weave,
yes,
my
sir.
Man Kenyon Martin, and good luck on everything you're doing.
My fellow light-skinned brother.
We'll be right back.
Pleasure,
the Two
bro.
Man
Thank
Weave.
You.
My name is Michael Rapport. Kenyon Martin. We'll be right back from live from the streets of New Orleans, NBA All-Star Week in 2017.
I am Rapport Podcast.
Det Lef Schrempf is here.
Seattle in the house.
Yes.
Yeah. They represent.
It's a pleasure to meet you.
Thanks for having me,
sir.
Oh, come on, man. Listen, now the two-man weave has become a three-man weave.
Definitely.
I'm running point, and I feel very confident about my two wing guys.
We got a shooter and an athlete.
Yes, we're ready to go. Thanks for joining us, Det Lef.
Thanks for having me.
How you doing, my man?
I'm doing pretty good. It's not raining. It's beautiful out there.
Yes.
So, yeah.
It was raining gumbo yesterday. I never saw that in my life. I heard of cats and dogs.
It was raining gumbo and crawfish.
Yeah, and beignets.
Beignets.
With lots of sugar.
Det Lef Schrempf. Now, I've been trying to say your name since I'm 15. Is it Schrempf? I know people have said it worse.
That's pretty good.
Schrempf.
Yeah, that's pretty good. Usually I hear a lot worse. Yeah. I get the what's your name? Det Lef Douglas. I go, Det Dick. No. That Ted, so just whatever.
Just, yeah, whatever.
Make whatever.
It, if you go to Starbucks, you're just like, yeah, just whatever. Just give me the. Just make sure you put two shots of espresso in there. 2-time Sixth Man of the Year, 3-time All Star. You came from a ridiculous draft class in 1985. Xavier McDaniel, Chris Mullin, then you, then a gentleman who's been discussed often in the last week and a half. But always close to my heart, Charles Oakley, Karl Malone, Joe Dumars, A.C. Green, et cetera, the great Patrick Ewing.
That's a hell of a class.
That's a draft class.
Yeah, a lot of guys played for 15-plus years.
And that's rare. That's rare in a draft.
I mean, that's something to be proud of.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Definitely. We had a pretty good culture back then, guys playing and enjoying it and competing.
What did you ever imagine as being one of the first successful, you know, really sort of standout guys from overseas? Now it's not just Europe. There's guys in the league from countries I didn't even know exist. You know, did you ever imagine that the NBA would be so multicultural and so worldwide legitimately? I mean, there's legitimate guys on so many teams from all over the place. Spain, I mean, it's crazy. Brazil, did you ever imagine that?
Not when I first started, but, the process of my career, at the end of my career, a lot of more guys were coming over. And at the beginning, guys said it didn't make sense, right, because they're making good money in Italy and Spain and Greece back then. Germany didn't really have a professional league, so there was no reason for them to come over because there were stars back home making good money. And the first two or three that came over struggled. So, you know, when you have guys that are superstars internationally and came over and struggled here, the younger generation was afraid of that. But once guys had success, more and more started giving it a try, and now we have a pretty much international league.
Yeah, I think it's great. I mean, I never would have thought it because there was such a stigma on guys. You know, they're soft, they're not playing, you know, and then guys would break through, but there'd be, like, for every one guy, there was the draft pick that the Knicks picked, the guy from France who never showed up.
Yeah,
I can't remember his name, and you know what? I don't care if I did know his name, I'm not going to say it, because I don't know where he is. He's been MIA since we drafted him. So I think it's really good that, you know, the league has been so multicultural. NBA All-Star Weekend, what is your first memory of being an NBA All-Star? When was your first trip to any NBA All-Star game?
I played for the East, and I remember that my guy was not guarding me, and MJ wouldn't pass me the rock, right? Because I was the rookie. I was like, I was wide open. I would never get the ball. They go, rookie.
Go get it off the glass.
Yeah, exactly. Try to tip it in, right?
Go get it off the glass.
And that was basically, back then, it was, the guys were all playing. You go, rookie's not going to get the ball. Yeah. You know, it'll tell you. So it was a different culture, and it was very competitive. And, you know, you didn't really talk to guys from other teams. They were. There was a lot of hatred going on.
Yeah. You mean while even though you're on the East or the West All-Stars?
Guys stuck with their guys, man. Yeah. Like, if he had a teammate there, that's who he was there with. Or He went to them. Yeah, it wasn't all this buddy-buddy and we going to hug it out and then go out and play and we going to be at the All-Star game. We can have the same agent, but we're not having the same event. Like, this is a new generation. Like,
wow.
On and off the court, it is a new generation in the way these kids are being raised to go out to compete.
Right.
For their livelihood. Like this is a job. We out here to compete.
Right.
Like, I shouldn't. Like, I can be your friend, but you got to cut it off at a certain point. And that's what that's the point, you know? Like,
Did you remember Detlef when he was playing for Dallas?
Yeah, I grew up, like I said, I'm born. I wasn't born in Dallas, but I've been watching him.
He's a lot younger than me now.
Yeah, I know. No,
but I was watching basketball, man. I was in tune. Didn't get a whole lot of like national games because we didn't have cable. So
that's right.
You know what I'm saying? We're watching local. We're watching the guys local. You know, so I watched a lot of Dallas Mavericks basketball games growing up.
Now you made the All-Star team with a couple of different teams. You one of the most iconic teams, I think, of the last 20, 25 years is your Seattle Supersonics team. Gary Payton and then Sean Kemp, who I actually was at basketball camp with Rex Chapman. He was a little better than me. Okay, things went. I took a different path that left. That's all I'm telling you.
Good choice.
Okay?
Good choice.
This is what I'm going to tell you. What do you remember about that team? You guys came so close. I mean, you know, there was so much hope with the Seattle Supersonics. George Karl, you and Kenyon Martin shared this in common. What's the thing that you think about that team? And where is Sean Kemp? And can you tell him to text me? That was my dude, man. Talk to me about that Sonics team.
Sean is he's living outside Seattle. He's doing well.
Good.
Him and his wife and still got a couple kids at home. He's doing well.
His son is athletic. His son is like 16, the same age as my son. They played against each other.
Yeah. Oh, really?
Yeah.
His son can play ball too, huh?
Yeah. Jump too, athletic.
Yeah. He's good. I mean, thinking back those days in the 90s, first of all, it was never quiet. We had GP. But it was crazy. I mean, we had a crazy team, different personalities from the coach on down. You know, there was a lot of craziness, but we were a veteran team. So we played hard. I was telling somebody earlier that our practices were harder than most of our games.
Really?
Because guys went at it, you know, and talked stuff and all those things. And it was fun because we knew we had a chance to win every night. You know, you step on the court and you think you're going to win. So that's how you played. And,
right.
Yeah, we had a couple disappointments early, but, you know, we made a good run at it. It's just I love getting on the basketball court when you know you have a chance to win every night. That's what it was.
How much of a disappointment was it for you? Because me as a basketball fan, I have no stake in Seattle. I have no stake in, the Seattle Supersonics. I was a fan, you know. But for me, and I don't understand the business of basketball, but for you being somebody that meant so much to the city, and Seattle had great fans and such competitive teams, going back to the Gus Williams days.
Yeah.
How much was it a heartbreak for Seattle to lose basketball?
I don't think people realized until they were gone, you know, because the last couple of years, I mean, Durant had just come. They weren't very good, right? So the politicians were arguing, well, we don't really need the Sonics. You know, we got the Seahawks, the Mariners, and but once they were gone, it was like this void there. And, you know, I was telling people that before. I said, you know, you're going to miss it because even if you don't go to a lot of games, you won't be able to take your son to watch the best players in the world play.
Right.
You know, you're not going to drive down to Portland because you don't like Portland.
Right.
You know, we're not fans of the Blazers.
Right. I mean,
they're just natural.
Yeah.
And so your kids will grow up without going to games.
Right.
And to me, that's a sad part, you know, because we have a great culture. I mean, we did an awareness thing a couple of years ago where Chris Hansen stepped up. He, you know, spent $100 million on property downtown to build an arena.
Mm.
And we had 40,000 people sign up for season tickets.
Mm-hmm.
Right? I'm going, okay, you know, David Stern, we're ready. Right?
Were you a part of it?
I helped just promote and
right.
stuff. No, but my checkbook is not big enough.
No,
to...
but I'm saying in terms of like getting it back there, because I think it's a shame, you know, when these teams in all big sports, like the San Diego Chargers. I don't care that they play in a dump Qualcomm. I was there this year. I had to bring my own seat. The place fall apart, but the fans love it.
Yeah.
You know, and like when these big sports, the fans don't understand where are you going. You know, like, OKC is now has their basketball team, but it's like the Seattle Supersonics. I'm looking at this picture of GP. I'm like, this is part of the NBA, the fabric of the NBA. Listen, granted, your uniforms were suspect. The green and yellow never made sense to me. But that doesn't mean you guys weren't competitive. Hey, I don't want to start a fight here. I'm just talking the truth here. And I'm colorblind, Detlef, but those uniforms were questionable at best. Now, what are you doing down here in New Orleans for this All-Star game?
The typical stuff. Did the NBA Cares yesterday. We went and visited some schools, helped rebuild some playgrounds, visited classrooms for some of the schools that were affected by the tornado. And then some interviews and talking to some of the sponsors and really catching up with guys that I typically see once a year. Yeah, right? Yeah, they're coming from all over the country. We go have a beer together and GP and I have a little bit more than that.
You think?
And talk about all kinds of stuff. So it's fun. It's a good time to catch up.
What was Gary Payton like as a teammate, as a point guard? You said talking. He's not even in the building, and I can still hear echoes of his voice from yesterday. Doesn't shut up. Fantastic player. What made him so good?
Oh, he competed. I mean, he competed every day. We fought almost every day because, I would get mad at him because he didn't want to practice or he didn't want to stick around for shooting, And I said, dude, you just missed 7 free throws. Go shoot some free throws. And he goes, I don't need that, So we fought every day. But as soon as the ball went up, he competed every day. He back then he played with sprained ankles, dislocated fingers, everything. He wanted to compete every day. Yeah. And there was nothing but respect for that.
Now, Kenyon's talked about it, and I know it's easy to say, whether it's music-wise, we were just talking about hip-hop, we could say the good old days this, the good old days that. You stopped playing when Kenyon was coming into the league. In all honesty, from what you guys see now, both of you, I want to hear both of your opinions, do you feel like the league has changed? Is it quote-unquote softer? You talked about being on the All-Star team, and it wasn't hunky-dory. You didn't work on any handshakes with Michael Jordan. You guys didn't do any, you didn't work any choreographed handshakes?
I got no rhythm, dude.
Nothing.
Come on.
You got something, but do you see the league changing? Is it for the good? Is it for the worse? Or is it a little bit in between?
Life changes, everything evolves, and the game has changed over the years. We played differently than, Oscar Robinson did.
Right.
You look at films, the game always changes. To me, it's, I love basketball.
Right.
That was my first love. If I could play, I'd play every day, right? The body just can't do it. So you kind of go, I go with it. They're great athletes, great players. It's just a different game.
How so is it different? When you say it's a different game, what do you mean?
Well, how many centers made the All-Star game?
Right.
Marc Gasol is the only really 7-footer. Okay, you can argue Andre Jordan. He's a center, but he plays more like a running wingman, like you did, right? Yeah. Run and jump and dunk and shoot. Yeah, right? And so it's a different game. It's penetration, kick, and three-pointers.
Mm-hmm.
When you look at how many shots are taken every year, the percentages of three-pointers, it's gone way up.
And Kenyon, what do you think?
Oh, it's soft. I just call it like it is. It's soft, man.
Well, you can't hit anybody.
Yeah, no,
as soon as you touch somebody.
Yeah,
it's
they started this thing a few years ago. They put this freedom of movement thing, they call it.
And what is that?
In the post on the perimeter, they want guys just to be able to run around freely and catch the ball and do and not be touched.
Right.
And anything results in a foul.
Right.
So this freedom of movement thing. They just want to They call it free-flowing basketball.
Was that an adjustment for you?
I never adjusted.
Okay. Sneak it. But it's like you can't do it all the time, right?
Yeah, I'm not going to compromise the way I play the game.
Right.
Because I was taught how to play basketball the right way.
Right.
I'm not going to compromise that, not at all. Just because y'all are changing the rules and all that. I'm going to continue to play hard. I'm going to continue to hard foul you if need be. I'm not going to try to hurt you, but I'm going to give you a hard foul.
Right.
No, I'm not with the freedom of movement thing. You cut through the paint, I'm going to chuck you.
I got you.
That's just the way I was taught how to play. You on a pick and roll, guy rolling blind down the paint, I'm going to stand you up.
Right.
This is the stuff Detlef was speaking on. I'm going to stand you up every time.
Right.
And, we played the Celtics in the playoffs when I was with the Knicks, and I got a foul every game on the same play.
Uh-huh.
They run and play KG dive. I stand him up. Boom. I stand it. But it wasn't like I was just in his way. But I didn't let him get to where he wanted to get to, so they called a foul. So
right.
By game three, actually game four, I'm like, you know what? Watch this. I'm going to show you what a foul is. He rolled blind down there, and I laid him out. And you hear him. I hit him right in the sternum. Now, looked at the ref. Now, that's a foul.
Right, call that.
You know? Like, that's me. Like, I'm not going to compromise the way I play basketball because this y'all babying these people and playing soft. Like, right. No. I'm not going to do it. I'm a straightforward guy. I don't know how to flop. I told the referees, you know, how guys work on jump shots and free throws and stuff during the summer. I told the ref one day, you know what? I'm going to work on flopping this summer. Maybe I'll get some calls.
Add that to your repertoire.
Add that to my repertoire. Get that LeBron James, LeBron Blames in my game.
LeBron, did you say Blames or James?
I think I said Blames.
We keep making the mistake. I think the microphone is biting.
He's wearing off on me.
I try to say LeBron James, but then sometimes people say you said LeBron Blames. Detlef, you were playing in an era of basketball that is so revered as the good old days. Who were the guys that you had to guard? Three guys that you were like, I need to tighten my bootstraps a little bit.
Good night's sleep, good meal.
Dude, every night.
Every night.
I played 2, 3, 4, so I went from Jordan to Dominique Wilkins, who's going to shoot 30 times.
What about this guy over here? Oh, Rexy.
Oh, my
Sexy
God.
Sexy Rexy.
I had to guard him and the players 1 year. They played small ball. He played the three. He's running off like three screens and shooting fadeaway threes. Man.
One-foot fadeaways.
Oh, yeah. And yes. I'm like, I'm going, dude, man, I'm 230. I'm fighting over screens. And then on the other side, I go, come on, post me up.
And they're not throwing it down there. And they're not throwing it down there.
Give me your best memory. You're 95 years old. Your kids say, Dad, grandkids, great-great-grandkids say, Dad, what was it like playing Michael Jordan? What do you say to them?
Man, it was fun. It was fun playing Garden, Chicago Stadium, you know, all those Madison Square Garden. It was a great time to play. And it was on every time. I mean, Jordan, the Bulls were great, and we lost to them. But, you know, we had some success against them. It was just a great time to play basketball. When the NBA was just taking off.
Right. Because
when I came in the league, you know, it was Magic and Bird is just kind of taking over, and the league had just started picking up.
Right.
And salary started to, you know, creep up, and the game all of a sudden started going on TV. When I was in college, there was one game on TV. I think it was like Sunday afternoon game or something, right? And then all of a sudden.
Dick Stockton.
Yeah. All of a sudden, you know, Friday afternoon, TNT, Sundays, Saturdays, and, you know, that's how the game evolved. So it was a great time to play.
Well, listen, Detlef, I've honestly, you're part of my youth. My, when you came into the league, I still had hoop dreams. I loved watching you play. I loved watching you compete. You know, you really brought the European flavor into the league, and you made a name for yourself outside of that. The Detlef Schrempf Foundation, can you tell me about that real quick?
Well, we're in our 24th year. We raised about $20 million, and we thank you. It's been, we're fortunate. Seattle is a very generous community. They're still very fond of what we did in the 90s, so we still have a lot of support. But we just raise money and do events and raise money basically for children in need. So we work with probably about 100 different charities over the years.
Okay.
Bring their kids in, raise some money, distribute the funds, and have them, you know, do their summer programs, after-school programs, whatever the need is.
All right, listen, I would love to have a full three-man weave with Kenyon Martin and Detlef Schrempf.
Don't drop the ball.
No, I won't. Listen, just get open. I'll give you the ball. Drop the ball. We're about dropping the ball. If you've not seen my work, YouTube it, Detlef.
I've seen it.
Just YouTube it. Don't worry. I was known as a crisp passer. All right? You just get open.
Two-hand chest.
Yeah, two-hand chest, and then I'll snap it at you. And don't say, oh, that's a little too hard. Okay, this isn't the 80s. I'm throwing at the ball tough. Don't catch the ball, make the shot, because I'm running back down court. Thank you so much for joining. Honestly, I've been a fan of yours for a while.
Likewise.
This is the two-man weave. Detlef Schrempf, Kenyon Martin. We're coming up with Etan Thomas, former Washington Wizard, Harlem born. Don't know if he was Harlem raised. We're going to get to the bottom of that. We're live in New Orleans. This is the two-man weave on NBA on TuneIn. I am Rappaport Podcast.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
Stay out of their lane. It's Two Man Weave with Michael Rappaport and Kenyon Martin.
Oh, did Martin get that? On the way back down, he tipped in the alley-oop. The set play out of a timeout. That might be the dunk of the night.
Live from All-Star Weekend in New Orleans.
This is the two-man weave. My name is Michael Rappaport, Kenyon Martin, coming live and direct from New Orleans, talking greasy in the Big Easy. Got special guest Eton Thomas. How are you, man?
I'm good. Yo, I'm loving that shirt you're wearing. I got to tell you, I'm loving that shirt you're wearing. Look, I was coming out my hotel, right? I ran into Oakley.
Out here?
Right out here yesterday.
Was it different than seeing Oakley all the other times you've seen him in your life, in your career?
Well, no, because I played with him with the Wizards for a year.
Okay.
Right? So I've been talking about him and talking about how messed up I think the whole thing with James Dolan is and everything like that. And, you know, he gave me a hug, gave me a pound, said thank you for the support and everything. We chopped it up for a little while, but that's my man. And It was messed up.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Speak on it. What do you think?
Listen, let me tell you this, though. First of all, you don't treat a player like Charles Oakley like that.
Right.
You don't treat any player like that, especially not Charles Oakley. Right. Charles Oakley is New York.
Right.
You know what I mean? I grew up a Knicks fan.
Right.
Like you said, I was born in Harlem. I wasn't raised there. I grew up in Tulsa, Oklahoma, but I was born in Harlem. Grew up a Knicks fan. Seeing him sweat blood and tears for the team.
Yeah.
Right? So his crime was talking bad about the organization or talking about something that they could have done better. Everybody does that.
Yep.
You know what I mean? So Dolan is going to say, okay, I don't want you talking about the organization so much you can never come to the Garden again.
Yeah.
And then the way you treat him like that, like he's like, I mean, and the worst part was the demonizing of him afterwards.
Right.
I hope he gets the help he needs, throwing out things about alcoholism, he's got anger issues and all this stuff. I mean, that was just evil.
Yeah.
I know you agree with me, but that's
absolutely.
It was messed up to see.
Absolutely. All right, you and Kenyon were in the same draft class,
right?
NBA. You're from Harlem. What hospital? You were born in Harlem.
Born in Harlem.
Do you think your life would have taken a different turn had you been raised in Harlem? There's no disrespect to Oklahoma.
Right.
I don't know what kind of flavor they got out there.
You don't know. Well, let me tell you though. In Oklahoma was tough. I mean, we had infiltration of Crips and Bloods that came in from L.A. They set up shop. It was, you know, I got a whole lot of homeboys that I grew up with that, you know, neighborhood Crips, Main Street Crips, you know, didn't make it to the NBA. I can name 20 guys that you ain't never heard of that should have been in the NBA way before me out of Tulsa, Oklahoma.
So they were wilding down there.
They was wilding.
Like drive-bys on horses.
That ain't what it is. That ain't what it is. You know it's not like that, man. But I spent my summers in Harlem.
Okay.
You know what I mean? Cool. So, you know, I was in the park playing, stuff like that. So much respect. Always got love for Harlem.
Okay.
Sit on the horse Eton, backwards.
It was like, man, banging in Little Rock. That HBO
It was real.
That was nuts.
Little Rock,
that
was Little real. Rock is like an hour from Tulsa.
So definitely, it was real.
So when I tell you it was real.
No. I'm from Dallas. I'm right down the road. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah,
so,
you know what
you know,
it is.
It's real.
I never understood it.
It's real in the field.
It should have been like fishing in Little Rock.
Not at all. They gang banging in Little Rock, Daddy.
Yeah.
They getting it in.
All right, Eton, what have you been up to? You've been writing.
Yeah.
You've been very outspoken about certain things. You wrote a great piece for the Players Tribune.
Right.
Why, how, what?
I wrote a piece about Terrence Crutcher after the murder of Terrence Crutcher.
Yep.
I went to school with his sister in Tulsa, Oklahoma. So
okay.
It hit really close to home for me. You know what I mean? So, you know, right now I'm down here. I'm writing a book called We Matter, Athletes and Activism. So I just interviewed Oscar Robertson. It was a great interview. So that's what I'm doing a lot now, you know, doing things of that nature. And there's a lot to speak out on, you know. So I do panel discussions. I did a panel discussion at Padilla University Thursday night. So let's, you know, keep myself busy a little bit.
What do you think that is about athletes and activism doing too little? Some guys want to speak out. Some guys don't want to be involved. Some guys care. Some guys don't care. The thing that I see as a fan of sports in general is I feel like guys, whether it's Kaepernick, you know, I feel like LeBron, you know, one of the things that, and I always break his chops, but one of the things that I admire and I respect about him is that being such a polarizing star, being a transcendent star, he has tried, you know, at times to speak out. And what is the thing? Like, how do you not go too far? Because I think one of the reasons why guys don't speak out is like, my endorsements, am I going to get fired? You know, can I take a knee? Well, what is your opinion on that, being a former NBA player?
I mean, right now it's a beautiful time because guys are speaking out in a way that they haven't in a long time. You know what I mean? I mean, you're hearing Carmelo who's speaking out about different things. Spoke out about the Freddie Gray situation. And, you know, after the, you know, Trayvon Martin was murdered. You know, I mean, you had the whole team, the entire team, the whole Miami Heat wore the hoodies mm-hmm. and posed for it. That was like an iconic picture. Mm-hmm. You know, after the Eric Garner was murdered, yep. they all wore the I Can't Breathe around the league. Mm-hmm. The whole Lakers did, even Kobe. Mm-hmm. Kobe wore I Can't Breathe shirt. You know mm-hmm. what I mean? So it's like there's a whole new generation of athletes that aren't really afraid. So even talking about, like what I talked about before with the Oakley situation.
Right.
You had LeBron come out.
Right.
You had D-Wade come out, say it wasn't right. All these different players who are the main polarizing players say, no. This guy might be in his position to be the owner of an NBA team, the owner of the Knicks, but what he did was not right, and I'm going to talk about it.
You know, for me as an actor, you know, like actors right now, because obviously now it, with social media, you know, award shows, everybody can articulate their opinion, and I think that's great. And I think, you know, whether you agree with it or not, you know, actors, like, the thing is, shut up, you're just a dumb actor. You know, athletes, I think Ali being, you know, the at the top of it, but with the Jim Brown and a lot of, you know, Bill Russell and Oscar right. and those guys, you know, have always sort of, like, their voices wanted and heard, you know, and Jordan took a lot of flack because he never said anything about anything. He was just being Jordan. And some dudes just like, yo, I have feelings, but this is just not my agenda. Obviously, that was a different time. Do you think guys get nervous to say things? Do you think guys get, you know, scared to participate? And what do you think athletes can do by being vocal and being on the front lines with their voices and their opinions, especially with all the stuff that's going on in the world right this minute in 2017?
When athletes are vocal, when Kaepernick was vocal and he started talking about everything that was going on, he started talking about politics, he started talking about the killings by the police and everything is mass incarceration, he started saying those words. He brought a conversation to people who didn't want to have that conversation, mm-hmm. who felt uncomfortable having that conversation. He invaded their sacred football that they wanted to have just apolitical. Mm-hmm. When the WNBA, right, after everything that happened, as an entire league, they started wearing Black Lives Matter shirts. It was so gangster. Like, I had to get them props on what they did. Yeah, they went to the media, right, after their games. They said, we're not talking about nothing except for what is going on in society right now. They're talking about Alton Sterling's murder, Philando Castile's murder, and Black Lives Matter, and that's what we're talking about. We're answering a little bit of your questions. We won. We didn't do this. Then this is all we're answering. As a league, they did that. That was dope.
What is your take on it, Kenya? Because you grew up hard, you know, and it's like you understand. I think both sides, because when you get the kind of success you get as an NBA player, how you grew up, what you grew up around, what you were exposed to doesn't change.
Yeah.
What is your feelings about athletes speaking out? You know, I think it's changed since you left the league.
Yeah, I think some guys try to protect their brand, mm-hmm. you know, and not say anything. They afraid of the backlash or what might be said of their statements.
Mm-hmm.
Some athletes give vague statements. Some
right.
they go out there and just to get the people like, I said something.
Mm-hmm.
And you have other people that's actually boots on the ground.
Right.
Like actually doing the work and being a part of the problem.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I'm the solution and not the problem, like Kaepernick. Like, this is what I'm going to do.
Mm-hmm.
And no matter what comes with that, I'm going to stick by my guns.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to stick on my guns and this is what I'm going to do. I'm going to take a knee every game and other people follow suit.
Right.
Other people see, like, you know what? He does have a point.
Right.
Why is he the only one doing it?
Yep.
I got his back. You know? And it's different for everyone. You know, it's people's things that they, like you say, they grew up around. They're not going to change. And things like we're in position now to be able to help and be able to speak out. And Eton's doing an excellent job of getting the message out there that needs to be said.
Right.
You know, things need to be talked about, need to be addressed, and there's no bigger platform than we have now with all the social media outlets that we have, man. But to each his own. To each his own. Some guys, that, like I said, they don't want to get involved with it, but I honestly think more guys should. LeBron James of the world, the Tom Brady's of the world. Guys who people actually pay attention to.
Right.
You know, whether you agree or disagree, have a panel.
Right.
Sit down, have open discussion.
It's important.
Yeah, have open discussion.
And
come from different things. We all have different views. We all not going to agree. That's life.
Right.
But be able to sit down and talk and have that dialogue back and forth and get it out there.
Yeah.
If you get it out there, like you said, Kaepernick got it out there.
Yep.
And people follow suit. So just getting the issues out there, talking about them, discussing them, and might not be able to move past every issue, but you get it out there, you get an understanding on what's acceptable, what's not acceptable, and things can work out. things can work out. We can coexist, man.
This is the two-man weave now. It's a three-man weave. Michael Rappaport, Eitan Thomas, Kenyon Martin. We got a big lineup here, okay? I'm not going to say, you know, we got any three-point shooters on this lineup here. But I got some big guys in the post. I'm going to throw it, move the ball. I'm the point guard of this. Eitan, are you enjoying the All-Star weekend? What is your take on this? Because just as a hodgepodge of people getting together,
right?
I think the game is fun, it's interesting, but the people watching is fantastic. We got pre-Mardi Gras. We got it's raining, crawfish and gumbo, and we have NBA All-Star Weekend. Are you enjoying yourself? What are you seeing? What are you liking? What are you not liking about being down here in New Orleans for All-Star Weekend?
Oh, first of all, the people in New Orleans are great. I mean, it's interesting because, you know, I live in D.C., so I'm walking down the street and everybody's like, you know, hey, how you doing? You know, how, and I'm like, hey, I'm doing okay. And it throws you for a little bit. You know, people don't just speak for no reason. You know
right,
what I mean?
Right.
Everybody's so warm. Everybody's all nice. And you go to a restaurant. The waitress is checking on you like seven times. You know,
right.
that doesn't really happen like that.
No.
You know,
I
mean, it's just the people are so warm. And the Mardi Gras is, you know, the energy. And everybody's having a good time. And it's just it's a beautiful thing. It really is. And what I like about All-Star Weekend is the networking that you can do.
Right.
You know what I mean? You're starting to see different people that you can work with and move and join. You know what I mean? Combine different things that you're trying to do. And that's the beauty of All-Star Weekend. You know, we have a lot of networks that sometimes we don't take advantage of as players.
Definitely.
You know what I mean? So we see each other.
Especially while we're playing.
So we start meeting each other and talking to each other a little bit more and seeing what each other is doing, and we connect.
Really holding on to cards and using and things like that. Now,
right.
Because we have to, you know.
Now a lot of ex-players, former players, are showing up, signing on to Ice Cube's Big Three League, 3-on-3. I've been asked to get on a few teams. I'm waging my options. Okay, I am. I'm just going to keep it honest.
I feel you.
I told Cube.
Time constraints.
I'm just saying. It's like, you know, like the money makes sense. Maybe I'll play. Maybe I'm not.
Okay, I got you.
Have you thought about this? Oakley's coming. We got AI. Right. Are you guys thinking about this? What do you think of this? Like, I think it's fun for the fans.
We're both signed on.
Yeah, he just signed on. I think I was one of the first guys to say yes.
Oh, you're playing.
I have my own team.
Right.
So wait.
My team name's Trilogy.
Yeah, we're both on.
Hey, listen, my team name is Trilogy.
Hold up. That's fantastic. Why am I just finding out about this now? You know my agent exists.
We probably would have got to that. We just need to get. I know your body's work. You know what I'm saying? I understand your body at work.
Wait.
Celebrity game MVP and all that. I get it. But. Listen, hey, Mike, see, there's money on the line.
Yeah, I got it. I got five hard fouls. I will make you proud with the hard foul.
But you can't foul out. But you can't foul out. That's the thing. You can't foul.
Yes, I can.
No, you can't. Not in this league.
Not
you can't.
In the league.
Oh, you mean you can't
right.
foul out.
The league,
right.
you can't foul out. See, the thing is, like, there's money on the line. Like,
right.
We're playing for, like, first through eighth place, right? And
I don't like where this
listen,
is going.
You're my listen, you're my friend. You're my friend. I'm about to get to you. Listen, you're my friend, right? But when it comes to this money, like
this might not be the business opportunity because
there's a draft process that we're going to do.
That's like, what I'm saying.
So there's a draft.
I'm
like,
available.
They're going to be. We might lose friends because of this. Like if a guy that I'm cool with is on the board, and the eye test for me, I don't think you're in shape.
Right.
I'm gonna skip over you.
Because there's a combine.
Listen.
So you playing too?
I'm playing.
Hey, there can be a difference. Like, it's first through eighth place, right?
Right.
First place gets a certain percentage of the total revenue.
Right.
Second place get. So it's slided down all the way to eight.
So, Rex Chapman,
listen,
I'm just
so
I'm
it's
just,
not. Listen, I'm not trying to come in eighth.
I got you.
I'm saying. Right. Not saying you're gonna make me come in eighth.
I got you.
But.
A line has been drawn in the sand, Kenyon. The two-man weave. It's a two-man lead. Do you guys expect this league to be competitive?
I think it's going
to
be great. You
so
know?
We need motivational speakers. Like,
that
like,
I got.
You got. I'm saying we there need we a go. Pep talk before every game.
I got you.
Bring in, get us right. Get
I'll
us,
get
I'm saying,
people's
get us
heads
in.
Right.
Yeah, definitely. You know what I'm saying?
All right, Eitan, it's a pleasure
trash
to meet
talking
you.
Is allowed in this.
I got you.
Yo, trash talking is allowed.
Now, if you want me to trash talk on behalf of your team and I'm not actually on the team and sharing percentage, a brown paper bag filled up to the top might work for me. It's Michael Rapport.
Got a legend in the house, man.
We got a legend
in
the house.
Man, played the Showtime Lakers, man. Hey.
AC Green.
First running team, man. They used to put that thing, hey, get it out and go.
Make
fun,
it happen.
Fun basketball.
Yeah, definitely, man. Fun and defending as well. Not just playing one way. That's good basketball, man. I appreciate it.
How you feeling, AC?
I'm good. Good, Mike.
It's a pleasure to have you here. If you don't know who A.C. Green is, I want to get a lot of listeners, but you should probably turn off the show. This is an actual legend. Came up in the 1985 draft, the same draft, Patrick Ewing, Xavier McDaniel, Chris Mullin, a gentleman named Charles Oakley, who's been discussed a lot lately, Karl Malone, Detlef Schrempf, NBA All-Star 1980, three-time NBA champ with the Showtime Lakers, 88, 87, 2000. All right, AC, I don't even know where to start with you. We only have you here for a little bit of time. What was it like playing in the old Boston Garden? How intense were those games with the Showtime Lakers?
No, I mean, it was pretty much what anyone can imagine because Boston was so good. You know, when you're playing a competitor, you know, you got to bring your game. You can't bring your B game. It's always the A game. And then you had the crowd was an element. You know, the Boston fans were legit. You know, they were 100% behind their team. So they came with everything they had. And it was always fun going to Boston because it was a real dislike for the Lakers, you know, and they always wanted to make sure they established the fact that they are the best and dominant team and really city in their own mind. And so it was really, really cool. And the floor and the garden itself was, you know, it was history. You go in and it's all the banners. It's like those college teams that walk into, you know, Poly Pavilion and you look up and you see the banners. It was, you know, overwhelming from, you know, when you first walk in there because you're like, dang. And it took some time to, like, get it right and get it, you know, hey, you got to go. And you, once again, you got to step up and be ready to play.
Most volatile court to play in, most volatile arena, Philly, those guys, they're serious out there too. Where would you say is the most volatile in those days?
Well, it was definitely on the East Coast. And, I'll give Boston definitely some love on that area. Philly, for sure.
Give them some love on their hate.
You know, Detroit.
What about the guy in Washington that used to show up at the games? And he was a lawyer, I think. And he used to come down and heckle guys. And
you're not kidding, man. Robert Vicker, man. Yeah. Trust.
So I heard stories. Byron told me some stories. Byron Scott told me a story, I guess, when James got in trouble.
Yes.
Whatnot.
Yep.
You guys thought he wasn't going to show up at the game, and he showed up late. He comes stomping down the steps like, I'm here, James. Yo, so what do you, the competitive advantages that, like, teams used to try to put you guys through, like going to Boston, having it extremely hot in the locker rooms or in the arena, like, what you think about it? Like, how was that?
Was that real? Were they really doing those little tricks?
No, that's 100%. That's 100 right there. They were definitely, being the Boston Celtics, it was any leverage, any edge you can create and you can get, it was, you know, it was real. So, yeah, hot water didn't work. You know, I remember the first time stretching on the parquet floor, during our shoot around the day of the game, and I just do one of those leg overs where you just all of a sudden you lean over and you just get that little stretch with, you know, your right leg going over, and next thing you know, I'm like on top of a screw that's coming out the floor, because something obviously poked me, and I'm like, what is that? And it literally was a screw on the parquet floor, and I'm like, man. And so I told the guys, and they're like, oh, man, they got everything around. Trust me, this is like, they said, you won't believe what's going to happen. Fire alarm goes off pretty much every other time we went into Boston. We always stay at the same hotel, and the fire alarm would go off. Never is going to go off at, 8 o'clock in the morning, you know, noon, 3 o'clock in the afternoon. No. Yeah. It's always like midnight at the earliest to 4 o'clock in the morning.
So it's the same guy that pulled the fire alarm during the Super Bowl this year.
Same guy. He's still from Boston.
Yeah.
He's from Boston.
Yeah, from Boston, exactly. And I would be surprised if he got Brady's jerseys also.
The fire alarm bandit. It's the two-man weave here. We're here with A.C. Green, one of the most positive, iconic players to ever play the game. A.C., let me ask you a question. You played with Pat Riley and Phil Jackson. I know it's hard to articulate in this short form. What was the difference in styles with Phil and Pat Riley? You know, as far as them being a coach, being a leader, what would you say how it differentiated between those two guys?
Well, you had a chance to play with what we call Baby Riles, of course, Byron. Mm-hmm. Okay,
yeah,
Byron
Scott. We're definitely going to get to that. Right. Have to explain this, please. Okay. We're going to have this discussion soon.
All right, so I'll set it up as by saying that, you know, Phil Well, let's start with Coach Riley is the more intense person.
Right.
Okay, just, I mean, the kind of guy that if he needed us to be ready for that particular game, he himself is going to come into the locker room full of sweat, okay, and he's going to communicate his message like it is the last 2 minutes in the game, and it's a fiery speech that he's just drilling home the key points. And so his tenacity was one that it just constantly protruded just throughout the locker room, and even in the timeouts, it was always just like that. That was just him. Coach Phil Jackson, on the other hand, in that same scenario, it's just a more of a calmer approach. You know, he's like, guys, we got to get, hey, we got to close, you know, close the middle. We got to make sure they shoot over the top. And when they, you know, contest the shots, Coach Riley, close the doggone middle. Make sure you put your hand in their face. If you got to foul them, and then, you know, it was just one of those kind of things. And so you're like, you just learn and adapt it to the personalities. But it was all just a setup because I want to hear Kenyon and Mark talk about my teammate.
Yeah, no, B. Scott, listen, B. Scott is definitely from Pat Riley's school of training, right? So Pat started this thing called Easy Run. Listen, man.
Riley started this.
Pat Riley started Easy Run.
Which is?
I don't know if he got it from somebody, but it is the single hardest thing that I've done since I've been in the NBA.
What is it?
It's a run. It's not easy. They put a time on the clock. Just say they put 20 minutes on the clock.
Jesus.
Right? And you line up free throw line extended. You got two lines. You line up free throw line extended. And they say go. And you run. You put your hands up, right? You got to run with your hands up. When you get to the other baseline, you do defensive slides. You get to the the corner of the baseline, you back pedal. Get to the other end, slide. Hands up, run, slide, backwards, run, slide.
20 minutes.
20 minutes straight. Could you go outside and run backwards for 10 minutes?
That way you do 10 seconds, listen, I'm going to have a problem with what you're talking about.
Your calves are going to burn so bad. Listen, man, I was a rookie. I'm coming off of tearing my ligaments in my ankle, breaking my leg in college my senior year. And this is the first thing that I have to do in training camp.
That's how he sets it off.
Listen, man. Unreal.
Is that verify this, AC Green?
Oh, no. It started with Rouse, 100%.
Ooh, where did he get this cockamamie idea from? It's cockamamie idea.
Yeah. Well, we can talk about it now, but we weren't going to dare ask him that, you know, by no means, because it came at the end of practice. You know?
Right.
Oh, so that's what B. Scott flipped it.
Yeah.
See, B. Scott, that's the first thing we did.
That's torture. Yes.
It's unreal, man. So the next year, you know me, I'm a thinker. I'm cerebral. Listen. So the next year, I'm like, I got something for you. So I would run forward, but when it's time to backpedal, I would slide my feet. I'm sliding them backwards, so I ain't got to run on my toes backwards. So I'm saving my calves.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? So I'm sliding them. I'm like, all right, I'm going to figure this out. Look, hey, not again. Not again.
Because it killed your calf.
Yeah, man. Like, that was bad. Was bad.
There's images in your head of you, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, Magic Johnson, and the whole crew doing this. Captain, the big cap.
Everybody. No one's out.
Nobody's
exempt. No one's out at all. Now, Phil Jackson, on the other hand, in our training camp.
Yes.
We wouldn't have two-a-days.
Y'all went to Hawaii.
And we would go, we would. No, Coach Riley loved Hawaii, so I will give him credit. He and Dr. Buss still would hit Hawaii. Yeah. But Phil Jackson would love doing just a basic a 90-minute practice session, okay? And it's putting plays in, you know, putting 5-on-0s. Mm-hmm. And so I go from what you just described to a Phil Jackson Laker training camp, one practice, 90 minutes as opposed to 3 hours, and I walk out of practice and I'm looking like, you know, is someone gonna grab me and by the collar and just like pull me back in and say, no, it's not over yet, because I'm like, is that it? Are we really done?
You know, it's a joke.
Oh gosh,
it was not only one practice for 3 hours,
right?
Two-a-days,
man.
Each practice 3 hours. Like, come these on, kids man. These days, listen, man, they on time restraints. Listen, they sitting out of games. Listen, like, they start, like, the stuff that AC and them had to go through, man, when they was, like, in their prime and coming up, like, the stuff that they were doing, man, like, the travel and the training, like, everything, man, like,
it was rough
right.
on those guys, man. And they the ones, like, in my opinion, they deserve to be getting paid all the money because they had the hardest, man.
Right.
Like, they stay in the city. They play stay in the city. And they got to get up and catch the first flight out, man, the next morning.
Like a regular flight.
Like a regular flight, man. There's only limited first-class seats. So just say AC's a rookie, right? He got to sit in the back with the common folks. He's, I'm saying, he, all right, like, we can't sit in the back of the
plane. Right, right.
But veterans get first choice. Like,
wow.
They, like, training stuff. Like, they didn't have all the equipment and all the stuff that we have now in order for recovery and
right.
all that. Man, they used to go literally put ice in a trash can and for recovery, man. Like, this is the stuff that they were going through. Like, and for people not to pay the homage and respect the stuff that they had to get through to get to this point, and now guys want to sit out of games. Mm. And, man, it's asinine, man.
AC Green played in 1,278 games out of 1,281 games. You missed three games in your career?
99.8%.
Jesus Christ.
AC, a lot of that is, God bless, luck, because there's no serious injuries. When did you become aware that this was something that was, like, when did you become aware that, like, yo, I didn't miss a game? Was it something you took pride in? Was it something you just, it just sort of happened, and then it became sort of part of your allure and part of, you know, what you did? Like, when that became a thing? And the second part is, what do you think about guys, like, look, I'm going to leave LeBron out of it. He's got tread on the tires. But what do you think about guys sitting out games, you know, 3 weeks into the season, injury-free? So it's a two-part question.
Well, first of all, I think I was raised, you know, by two Southern parents, you know, Oklahoma and Texas. Okay, and so you can imagine down south, you know, you know what work is and hard work is. And so that's pretty much where it came from, the culture of going to work. I saw my parents get up, go to work. I'm coming home from school. One's going in the house, one comes out the house, and they're tag teaming and providing for me and my three brothers and sisters. And so I saw the pattern of going to work and define a definition of hard work.
Mm.
And so when I inside of me, so when I went on and was, you know, like you said, blessed to really to go to the league, if I could breathe, I could play.
Right.
It was just as simple as that.
Right.
You know, you just went on and did work. And some days you played well, some days you didn't. But the attitude on you going and ready and showing up to work, that's what you did. And so to your second point, it's very simple. You know, I get it today, but I don't understand it, okay, because obviously, you know, but we know there's ailments. We know people get hurt, but, you know, put it in perspective, like you said, you just coming into the first month of the season and you getting a rest day.
Right.
You know, I'm going to let Kenyon answer that one because I'm going to stop there.
No, like, I had a problem with it all, man. Let me tell you, so they got this new thing, it started when I was in New York, when I was playing for the Knicks, that they put this vest on you, and there's a chip that they put, niggas, mm-hmm. computer and all this. So they try to monitor your workload, right? And they put in a chip, and if you working out or whatever, they hold guys out of practice the next day because your workload is over 1,000.
Right.
Like, but for me, if I'm in shape, right?
Right.
And if I'm in basketball shape and the shape that I know I'm in to go out and play basketball, that chip can't tell you how hard I'm working.
Mm.
You know what I'm saying? Because basketball is easy for me. Because
mm-hmm.
I think the game first and foremost. I put myself in position and situations to where it's smarter, not harder. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
So you can't tell me that my workload is not the same as the next guy. You know? So they babying them in that, like, in this aspect. So guys are practice one day and you come in next day and he in there. Like, we getting ready and he ain't getting taped. I'm like, what? Like, what's going on? Oh, yeah, his workload was over 1,000. And...
Right.
Like, that's wild. Like,
right.
like it's
right.
like, how, like, really, man? Like, who are you to say that I'm not working hard?
Right.
Like, I right. dare you. So, therefore, there was this thing, like, can you please put the chip on? No, I'm not putting the chip on.
AC Green, I got to let you go. I just want to tell you, I really respect and appreciate all that you did in the league, all that you do with the AC Green Youth Foundation. You've been a great moral role model when you played. Continuing to be a part of the NBA, I want to say with all due respect, one of the illest Jerry Curls to ever walk the earth. First couple of years in the league, it was astounding. Thank you for joining us on the Two-Man Weave.
Yes, sir.
Pleasure to see you again. I've seen you throughout the years. You look fantastic.
Thank you.
And continue doing your thing and continue to do it in a positive way because I know that's what you're all about. It's a Two-Man Weave. AC Green joining us. Kenyon Martin. My name is Michael Rapaport. We'll be right back on NBA on TuneIn.